Good morning. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, we'll hear about a production by the Arvada Centre for the Arts that seeks to elevate black voices. We'll hear from the producer of Amplify. Then History Colorado launches a new programme today that gets people out and about on the streets of Denver searching for clues. It's part of an immersive history programme. We'll hear more later in the morning. After that, we'll get a new food waste tip from John Lendorf. It's part of our year-long series on food waste. And then we round out today's Morning Magazine with Trends Diary. At 8:30, Duncan Campbell is your host for Connections. And his guest today is Lisa Graves, chair of the Centre for Media and Democracy. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. The Pine Gulch Fire is now officially the largest fire in Colorado history. The fire north of Grand Junction grew to more than 139,000 acres on Thursday. That means it has surpassed the Hayman Fire, which burned over 137,000 acres northwest of Colorado Springs in 2002. The Pine Gulch Fire started by lightning on July 31st. It's now 77% contained. The Colorado Rockies and the Arizona Diamondbacks postponed the last game of their series on Thursday in Arizona. This is as Major League Baseball is joining sports leagues across the nation in protesting racial injustice. Steve Miller has more.
The Denver Post reports that the Colorado Rockies players released a statement saying that, as a group, they decided not to play Thursday's game against the Arizona Diamondbacks as they stand alongside other athletes and sports teams against social injustice. The game was scheduled to start at 4:10 Thursday afternoon, and the last-minute postponement was unexpected. Rockies player Matt Kemp sat out of Wednesday's game following the police shooting of Jacob Blake in Wisconsin. Rockies manager Bud Black said that the players are having emotional conversations about what they feel are the racial injustices occurring in our nation. Black feels that the situations in the U.S. are real and need to change. He hopes that the players' discussions will help make that change. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
A fraternity at CU Boulder will be fined for a gathering that broke public health protocols in place to combat the spread of coronavirus. The Denver Post reports that the Sigma Alpha Epsilon fraternity threw a party that drew 120 students to the organization's house on University Hill on Wednesday. The Interfraternity Council on the Hill, the governing body, will fine Sigma Alpha Epsilon $10 per member. That's about $1,750 in total for this first infraction. This comes as the University of Colorado completed its first week of classes, with some students taking in-person classes and others online. CU says it has many protocols in place in the face of COVID-19, and it has said that there will be consequences for students who violate them. A memo issued Thursday by the Vice Chancellor of Student Affairs said that students who are caught at any gathering that does not follow rules could face a two-week banishment from campus, during which time they may only participate in classes remotely. They could also be placed on probation. This affects a student's ability to study abroad or attend graduate school, and they would be required to participate in educational sanctions. Repeated or egregious violations will result in a suspension from school, according to the memo. Cooler temperatures in the forecast for the Front Range today. Highs in the low 80s with a chance of rain later on. Highs staying in the 80s through the weekend. You're listening to KGNU. A new online series seeks to amplify black voices in Colorado. It's a co-production with the Arvada Centre for the Arts and producer Betty Hart. I spoke with Betty about Amplify.
I really thought what we need to do is specifically focus first on black men. And so the first series was on 15 black men. And the idea behind that was, one, with the murder of George Floyd, and also that black men in our country actually have less status. You know, like, they're in prison more. More women are going to college and graduating. That there's something interesting. More black men are feared. More black men are killed. I just thought it made sense to start with amplifying their voices. And then audience response was beyond anything I could have imagined. So I was given the green light to move forward with what would I like to do next. And so, of course, I said, let's hear from the Black ladies. Let's hear from the women. And so I've had the great opportunity to have 15 Black men and 15 Black women given the freedom to express where they are and what they'd like during this moment. So they didn't have any boundaries whatsoever. Many chose to use an artistic expression. Some wanted to go ahead and just speak politically, and others wanted to really kind of call out what's happening to them in the theater community here in Colorado. And so wherever they were given the space to do it. And it's been my great honor to be able to allow those voices to be heard to a degree that they haven't before.
Give us a sense then of some of the themes that are being explored, because I know obviously this is a very personal experience, you know, for Black people, what's going on right now, but also then you're connected to the broader trauma of what's happening, not just now in society, but what has been happening for generations that has never been resolved. And there's so much that's being experienced on an individual level, but also sort of experiencing what's happening with society. And I know all of that is sort of being explored in this, but maybe take us through how some of the artistic expressions can tackle some of those massive, massive themes.
Yeah, that's huge. And thank you, Maeve. I would say that certainly specific themes have emerged. One that I think it has to be called out is fear. There's a great deal of fear, fear for humanity, fear for the Black race, and personal fear. A lot of individuals have talked about their fears of walking down the street and will they come home, or having a mother have a fear of whether or not her sons will ever be able to make it. There's a lot of fear that's definitely been expressed in different ways. And people have expressed it in really moving pictorials, the way Marisa did in the first episode, in the fourth segment. It was really powerful. She's writing a play and she decided to deliver a monologue from that play and show us the landscape of the place where that person in the monologue runs in Colorado Springs near the Broadmoor, and how once upon a time that run was an expression of joy and physical activity and freedom. And now it's an expression of fear and her wondering whether or not her wife will ever get to see her on social media the way so many other people have died. That's a really powerful and personal expression of fear, but it's done very evocatively. And I think it helps the viewer to see, oh, something I might take for granted, like being able to enjoy the outdoors, has an added complication because of what's happening in our country. Certainly many of the gentlemen talked about fear of the police because they get to experience DWB, driving while Black, which happens to so many people. I talked to my brothers, they've experienced it. I'm very grateful to have not experienced it, but to be able to talk about that rich tapestry of fear. I think another theme that certainly emerged, certainly in the men, somewhat in the women as well, is anger. Right? You talked about the fact that these problems are pervasive. They've been around for a long time. They aren't new in any way. Our parents dealt with them. Our grandparents dealt with them. It's been going on for so long. And there's a righteous indignation, if you will, that this is still taking place in such an amazing country where it doesn't have to be this way. So those are two themes that have certainly have emerged. And then I think also throughout, there's also a theme of joy. Because to be Black in America is to both experience the pain and the beauty and the power of being a Black person. And so joy is also a theme that is coming through. And I think the best example of that is in the first episode of the Women's Edition, The Final Selection, which has a beautiful song that Stephanie Hancock wrote, and it's called the La La Song. And you hear it and it just gets stuck in your brain because it's so filled with love and vitality and joy. And I think that's pretty indicative that that's what we do. We move through society constantly concerned because of the situations we have to deal with. And yet we refuse to allow our joy to be stolen from us. And so we still have joy.
We've been doing a lot of coverage about the impact on arts and culture of the COVID-19 pandemic and really how it's decimated the industry and artists themselves who we're always sort of living on the edge financially in many ways. You know, the vast majority of actors, musicians, artists and all of the other, you know, supporting, you know, jobs in the industry. And then I've heard artists of colour say, yeah, but this is also a double pandemic because you put COVID-19 on top of that, with communities of colour disproportionately impacted by that. And then we have, you know, our industry being impacted by COVID-19. With discussions of how do we support arts and culture going forward, you know, what are your thoughts on making sure that it's done with an equity lens, that it's done supporting all artists, and that we don't have further inequality emerge at the end of all of this?
I love that question, Maeve. The question of how do we make the arts an industry that is equity-based is a fantastic one. By no means do I have all of the answers, but I think part of the answer is in looking in the board of directors of theater companies, because that's really where power lies, looking at who are the artistic directors and the associate artistic directors. Are there people of color in the administrative staff? When plays are being selected, is the room filled with people who all look alike? That tends to happen. And so if we want to move to an equity lens, then we have to diversify who's in the room where it happens, to use Hamilton's phrase. That's a huge part. There also has to be intentionality in the casting process. I like to say that right now, the default is white. It just, if it doesn't say it, then it goes to white. And as an actor who's come out for auditions and looked around and seen that I'm the only Black person in the room, whether it be the general auditions or whether it be the callback, there is something psychologically about having to walk in and say, okay, here we go. And know that even if you're fantastic, you may not really be considered simply because the director never considered the role for anyone other than a white person, even though there's absolutely nothing in the text that dictates this. And so it becomes imperative for theater companies to do training, to look at what is happening in terms of unconscious bias, because by no means do I think it's malicious. Theater artists tend to be some of the most open-hearted, intelligent people there are, but they're also human, which means unconscious bias is affecting them just like it's affecting our larger society. And unless we take the time to examine our unconscious bias and bring it to the conscious place, we can't act on it. Instead, it continues to act on us. So I think if we really want to move to an equity lens, we have to diversify our boards. We have to look at the makeup of our administrators and those in power in theater. We absolutely have to check directors' bias and really ask questions. When a casting director is bringing people in, somebody has to say, why don't I see any people of color? And unless the story is taking place in Ireland, or it's a specific story that is told, because there are, then someone has to ask the question and cause us to shift behaviors. When that happens, there is the potential for more equity. We still haven't scratched the surface, but at least there's a potential to change things from where they are now to move us to a stronger place. If you want to go to complete and total equity, that's a whole other conversation. And I would definitely encourage you to take a look at what our friends are doing with Idea Stage. IDEA stands for Inclusion, Diversity, Equity, and Access. And this amazing group of people have created a set of standards that they would like Colorado theaters to adopt to help move us into a more equitable place. I'm not a part of them, but I'm a big admirer of what they're trying to do.
Betty Hart, co-producer, along with the Arvada Centre for the Arts of Amplify. The latest episode is released today on the YouTube channel of the Arvada Centre, and Stephanie Hancock, who we're listening to now, is one of the featured artists.
Always hoping, always showing, got to pass the test. Life is leading.
Well, if you're looking for a way to get out and about this weekend in a socially distant manner, History Colorado is launching today a brand new interactive experience throughout the city, and it's designed to connect you with Denver's past and to see the city through new eyes. I spoke with Chris Getson of History Colorado and Andrew Novick, who designed The Lost Book of Astrid Lee.
Astrid, she's old Denver. Her family was among the people that supported Robert Spears' run for mayor. Her mother was a Denver health nurse. Her father worked at DU. She grew up in Denver during the 50s and 60s, when there was an awful lot of tumult, and the city was changing drastically. As far as how Astrid ties into what History Colorado is doing. It's all part of this big initiative they're doing called "What This Is What Democracy Looks Like," and it's the History Colorado Center is featuring art and artifacts there, and filmmaking and performance and all sorts of different things, looking at American democracy, looking at its breakthroughs and what's fantastic about it, at its shortcomings and where it's going. And we thought, Andrew and I thought that we look at democracy as like getting a say, but not only getting a say is it's like getting a say in what you get a say in. And that's how Astrid defined it too, funnily enough. And so the quest looks at democracy or getting a say in the workplace and what it's like to be. A lot of folks don't know what it's like to be organized in a union or how they even work. So what that looked like historically and now, different forms of democracy that people have experimented with here in Denver, and getting a say in democracy in movement and migration, whether that's across town or over a national border. And I think the big thing that we want is for folks to ask, why not us? People in the past managed to accomplish quite a bit, despite overwhelming levels of violence, differences in language and background. They didn't have the technology, the sorts of technology we were just talking about. They didn't have access to Twitter or, you know, Zoom chats or any of those things, but they still did a whole lot. And I think there's a kind of pessimism now that we're at this sort of an end to things. And that's not, and history shows that's not the case. There's a lot to take inspiration from. And I think that's the hope, is that folks can kind of come away asking, we want people to ask more questions than they came in to any of these activities with.
So how can people participate in this? Because as we've said, it's kind of a scavenger hunt, but people can, from August 28th, you know, for a month essentially, participate in this as sleuths, take themselves around Denver. How does this work, Andrew? You're kind of the designer of this, I suppose, in terms of, are there clues? Is there a map? How do people unlock?
Yeah, we like to think of it as a mystery quest, as opposed to a scavenger hunt. Because a scavenger hunt, you know, it's like, oh, find a guy with an eye patch and take a picture with him, or, you know, find something purple, something like that. And so this is definitely more of a quest where you will have to solve some kind of a puzzle, but that will take you to a location where you have to actually present something or say something or pick up something that's related to all of these other aspects. And so the things that you solve and the places that you go are actually all related to this history. And so that's why it's more of a quest. It's a quest for experience. It's a quest for knowledge. And so, yeah, there will be maps. There will be puzzles. There will be, you know, there's all sorts of different things. And there's a lot of takeaways too, not just kind of the discovery factor of learning about your own city in a different way. But we've invoked several local artists to create things that you will come across during this. And some of the things are actually take home things. So people will actually get to keep some things out of this.
And ultimately, is one big question answered or a mystery solved? Or is this really a series of questions that get answered, sort of along the theme of what you mentioned earlier, Chris, this idea of democracy, what it is, and, you know, how do we organize our society? Is it kind of a series of mysteries that are solved through the quest? Or is there one big revelation that'll enlighten us if we get to the end of it?
There's going to be lots of mini revelations along the way. And, you know, and I think in the same way that, like, meeting a friend over a cup of coffee and talking about what's happened, what's happening now or what's happened in the past, hopefully this can stir that kind of conversation and hopefully push on some stuff in terms of, like, I didn't think about getting a say at my job before, or I didn't think that I could experiment, that we're allowed to experiment with different forms of democracy, or that there's a legacy, that there's a whole legacy right in the place that we live that we can draw on and learn from and push on those experiments a little bit further, or just chuck them out the window and say, well, that didn't work and we're going to try something completely new. So I hope it really, I hope it pushes people.
And in terms of the historical aspect of this, is this very much based in sort of downtown Denver, and or is it all over the city? I mean, what kind of history is involved in all of this?
Yeah, that's a great question, Maeve. It spans the whole city. And in places, hopefully in places that maybe people didn't expect, or that maybe they didn't know that that there were, for example, I was on a call with some teens that work with History Colorado late last year. And I mentioned the Black Panther Party, and they said, "You mean the movie, right?" They didn't know what they didn't know who the Black Panthers were. They didn't know that there was a chapter here. So that's just one, one piece of it. But there's also connections, I think, to what's happening now as well. And that's, I think, the really cool part is hopefully that people can kind of see themselves in the past. Also see the past and what's happening now. And a lot of times that, again, that's like a, that tends to be a, when we think about disasters or catastrophes or tragedy, that's how we look at, you know, the past now. But maybe it can be a little bit different with this.
The mystery quest to solve the mysteries behind the lost book of Astrid Lee, a creation of Andrew Novak and Chris Getson at History Colorado. It starts today, and you can pick up your quest package starting today. But now you don't have to do it all in one day. It spans several weeks. In fact, it runs from today through September 30th. And you can register in advance and find out more at the website for History Colorado. It's time now for another food waste tip from John Lendorf.
Hi, it's John Lendorf from KGNU's Radio Nibbles, here with another practical way to cut food waste, save flavor, and save some money. For instance, we literally pour gallons of still edible milk and milk products and money down the drain every week. Do this instead. If you know you will not drink milk before it sours, just freeze it in an ice cube tray and store those cubes in a bag for later use in coffee or oatmeal or rice pudding or for baking. And if it turns a little bit, if it's sour, then use it like buttermilk in pancakes or biscuits. Or you can use it to marinate and tenderize chicken before you fry it. Leftover milk can be used in cream sauce, Alfredo sauce, which you can keep in the refrigerator or freeze. It can also be used in fruit smoothies, which you can make and then freeze. Or you can use it to make yogurt or kefir using a culture. And the same thing goes for cream and buttermilk. And remember, composting, that's the last resort. You can find all these tips and other food waste information at news.kgnu.org.
Up next, it's Trends Diary.
Time now for Trends Diary, where Boulder County residents of all ages share personal experiences that relate to a pressing community need. The focus for now is on our shared need to connect and solve problems, despite the increased isolation we're all experiencing during the COVID-19 pandemic. This project is brought to you in partnership with Community Foundation Boulder County.
Dear Trends Diary, Katrina Miller speaking. My business is Black Cat Video Productions, and I have a website, and I'll spell it out for you because it's a little complicated. BlackCat videoproductions.com. It's a play on my name, Katrina Cat, and the fact that I'm Black. There's not a lot of history recorded about African Americans in Boulder. For the most part, we feel unseen and on the outskirts of community. So I want to put a strong spotlight on what's going on in Boulder's Black community. I received a grant from the Creative Neighborhoods COVID Work Project to help me kickstart this historical account. A significant portion of Boulder's African American community is elderly, people who are 70 and above, and have lived here long enough to remember when coffee houses on the hill were whites only. Their age not only makes them high risk for physical health complications, the isolation of quarantine can also have devastating effects on mental health. Most of the elderly population in Boulder don't have family nearby and are not necessarily technically savvy enough to make those connections online. There aren't opportunities to strengthen and exercise the brain, which can lead to memory loss. These factors terrify me because there is now a real possibility that the historical stories that reside within this elderly generation will fade away. My film follows 91-year-old Elmira Davis. She founded the first gospel choir in Boulder at Second Baptist Church. For 110 years, Second Baptist has been a source of inspiration and strength for Blacks in Boulder that have planted roots. But because of COVID, the church has been closed since March, leaving Elmira and many other elderly congregants without a sense of purpose. This is devastating for our community. Personally, I really need our elders to be okay, because they hold the stories that make Boulder's history complete.
Feeling inspired? Do you have your own story of making connections or solving problems during this time of physical isolation? Then visit www.commfound.org. Look for Trends Diary and share your experience with Community Foundation Boulder County. Your submission could wind up on these KGNU airwaves.